Hey, Comic Book Nation, BD here. Welcome to a special comicbook.com show right now. This is Game Over, an evening with Joe Russo. We are super excited to have you guys. We have to put a warning out. Spoilers for Avengers Endgame.
Absolutely, spoilers, follow. Yes.
Yes, the spoiler ban lifted today. You are watching live right now. We appreciate you being here. We are at the Duello Restaurant in Los Angeles. This is your restaurant.
That's right.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
A few things to congratulate you on. First of all, a little movie is performing decently at the box office.
We're very happy. I mean, look, we always look at that as a, you know, reflection of how the audience feels, and we're happy that they're happy.
We're very happy. I don't know. I've seen the movie three times, and still everybody cheers at certain points that we're going to talk about. I mean, I'd just like to start by asking you, now that this is in the rearview mirror and you can talk about it, how does it feel? I mean, this is 7 years for you with Marvel, right?
It is 7 years. By the way, if you haven't seen the movie, stop now. It's your last warning.
Can't stress that enough. Come back after you've seen the movie.
But it has been 7 years, and it's been amazing. I mean, we've had incredible experience with Marvel. I think what's unique about what we've done, and it's certainly been aggressive, and, you know, four movies, and I think in 6.5 years, and they're significant films. And, you know, we built an incredible team of collaborators that, one, we loved working with, and two, are just brilliant. And, you know, we couldn't have done all four movies without that team. And I feel like, you know, certainly the bar that you have to hit on Infinity War and Endgame, not only from a fan expectation standpoint, but just from a pure engineering feat, taking that many characters and trying to tell a cohesive story woven over those two movies was, you know, mind-boggling. Like the level of difficulty is staggering on that. And without that core team, I think it just would have been impossible.
I mean, perfectly balanced.
Yeah.
That's all things should be.
That's right.
Yes. Here comes the first big spoiler question. I want to know, what was the last, you guys shot these Infinity War and Endgame back to back. So what was the very last thing you guys shot on these two films?
We shot a back-to-back for a year straight. We did 6 months on each movie with 2 weeks in between, which was also crazy. My brother got pneumonia in between the two films. So that's the kind of physical toll it takes on your body, and then you kind of release it. Whenever you have a break is when you tend to get sick. We ended up having to stop Endgame early in January of, let me see where we're at, I think it was 18. And we had to finish Infinity War, meaning we had to finish it in the edit room, we had to go through the VFX, we had to do the score, and we couldn't do that while we were also working every day on shooting Endgame, so we stopped right before the third act of Endgame, the final battle. We shot a few pieces for it, but most of it we punted until September and October of 18. So we finished Infinity War, did the press tour, released the movie, went back in the edit room and worked on the first two acts of Endgame, then went back and shot the third act, went back in the edit room. And then what we always traditionally do is we'll have friends and family screenings, a few of them, 3, 4, sometimes 5, and collect information. What are you following? What are you not following? Typically, it's usually the plot, or maybe there's a character beat that they're not tracking. And then we collect our ideas and go back and try to do very targeted reshoots. Sometimes we'll just get a close-up out of someone, sometimes we'll get a line, sometimes we'll redo a whole scene, sometimes we'll create a new scene. And we went back and did a couple of days of reshoots to tweak all the material that we'd collected. And the last thing that we got was Robert saying, "I am Iron Man," and snapping his fingers. That was a very last shot on the last day. Now, what's interesting about the story is we're in the edit room for months with that scene, and we were like, I don't know, how do you give Tony Stark a last line that has any resonance? We tried a few things, and they just weren't working. They felt flat to us. Then we had a read that was silent, so we tried him doing it silent, and that felt flat because you had Thanos saying, "I'm inevitable," and then you had a smile from Tony, and he clicked his fingers, and it just didn't quite have that energy that you wanted, or, you know, that closure that brought the thing full circle. And we're sitting in editorial with our editor, Jeff Ford, who's one of the key collaborators that we couldn't have made it through these four movies without. And he said, "Well, what if he says, 'I am Iron Man,' in response to 'I am inevitable'?" And it it felt like, you know, it was should have been written that way as a response to that line. So yeah. Maybe I'm taking some of the magic out of it by telling people it wasn't.
I think it adds magic to it. I think it makes it even cooler.
And what's crazy about it is, and really beautifully poetic, we shot that at Raleigh Studios here in Los Angeles. And the stage that we shot it on was next door to the stage where Robert did his original screen test for Iron Man. So it really did come full circle for him, which made it very emotional. I mean, the day that we finished that, with that being the last line, that being the shot, closing the book, you know, closing the cover on the book. And it started, you know, a stage away and ended on this stage, was very, I think, resonant for him.
That's really poetic. Guys, we are going to take some live questions towards the end of the show here. We have some really cool stuff we might be able to give away to you, like some quarter scale Infinity Gauntlets from Hot Toys, from our friends at Sideshow, who sent these over. As you can see, there is a full-size gauntlet. You can get that from Sideshow, too. This is pretty cool. Is this, like, how tall is Thanos?
He's a little over 8 feet.
Okay.
And so this is pretty close to scale. So I think it might actually be the based on the model that we used on set, if I remember correctly.
So he's basically Dwayne Johnson.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to go character by character and get to as many as we can. The main Avengers and Thanos. Yeah. I want to start with Captain America.
Yeah.
Going into Endgame, I can speak for myself, and I think a lot of people had Captain America as the character who was most likely to die. If you had a Deadpool with your family, your friends, Cap was the guy you picked. And
which is why we didn't kill him.
Is that why? Because I'm curious, when did you guys decide?
I mean, listen, it's not about trying to subvert expectations all the time, even though that comes into it. And you go, typically when you're in a writer's room and you're working through storytelling, and if somebody says something that feels obvious, you go, well, that's the expectation. And it's not like we don't always meet expectations, but the job, I think, is to surprise people.
And you did.
And
he definitely did.
But the reason you surprise them is because if you're really tracking Cap's arc, he starts off as a selfless character who has given over his identity to service, right? He is more than happy to serve the greater good and serve the community because he believes in the cause. And at the time he took up the cause, it was black and white. It was very clear what he was doing. And for the next 7 years later, coming out, the whole story that we told about the social was, has become populated. Can you trust Corey now? And the movie proved him that he could not. And he had to choose between his identity as an individual and his identity as Captain America. The character that was in service to the greater good. Captain had to reject authority. The worst in Civil War. He became an insurgent. And now he's going on. This is just from a storytelling standpoint. The curvature and the arc that you're creating, characters are always most compelling when they travel the greatest distance. So if Cap is Rocky and all he ever does is get into the ring and try to beat his opponent, it's gonna get boring really quickly, right? There's just not a lot of dimension that you can add to the character. And so what we wanted to do was, you know, travel him on this, you know, this incredible journey that took him from service to self-actualization, to where he wanted to fully embrace the identity of Steve Rogers. That is what happens at the end of Endgame. And I know it's controversial for some people because they feel like you should always be that guy in service. But that just feels like an elliptical story that, you know, never ends.
Right.
It feels like what you can do in the comic books because you can keep resetting it and recycling it. But it's not something you can do over the lifespan of a movie. He has to travel some distance. Right. He has to go somewhere as a character.
I mean, and I go back to Age of Ultron on the line where he says about the guy who wanted all those things went down on the ice, and I think that was more of, I take it as he was lying to himself, trying to accept it. So I like the ending you gave him. He was trying to convince himself all along, even in the scene with you, where you had your cameo, I think he was trying to convince himself. So he takes the out of going to the past, and a lot of people are wondering how that timeline kind of crosses into the main timeline. Does that change something? Is that?
I mean, look. The what's most compelling is that this is a multiverse, right? And that I don't know if you watched the Spider-Man trailer today, but that is what is most interesting, right? You've seen everything else.
Yeah.
Everything else about being looped in time or whatever. You've seen it all. What's really interesting is that you create multiple timelines, and it's said in the movie twice. if you're paying attention to what the characters are saying. They're each talking from their own perspective. Banner is a man of science, and when he's explaining to everyone, you know, in that room why movies are wrong, you know, and he's talking about it from a quantum physics standpoint, he says that if you leave the present to go to the past, then that present has become your past. It has always happened. You know, you can't change it by influencing the past. What happens is you then create a new future by going to the past.
Right.
So you have to go travel to the past, retrieve something, come back to that present, and then fix it moving forward.
Right.
Right? Because you can't alter it from back there. So by necessity, by logic, you then create, if you were to stay back there, you would create an alternate timeline.
Right.
Now, the Ancient One explains it from her perspective as well, which is if you take one of these stones, you will create an alternate timeline. What's really interesting, and this is where it gets very heady and philosophical, is, you know, she's saying to Bruce Banner, you have a moral responsibility to come back and save all of the people who may die in this timeline. If I give you the stone to save everyone in your timeline, you have to repair it.
Right.
Because the stones are special, they can erase those branches,
yeah.
Right? And that's what Steve ends up doing at the end of the movie.
I like the decision. Can't say I wouldn't have done that same thing.
Yeah, well, you know, it just creates a lot of opportunity for storytelling,
right.
Unique storytelling.
I mean, you guys opened a lot of doors for the future here.
Yeah.
You wrapped a lot up, you opened up a lot of doors as well. Why does Sam get the shield instead of Bucky?
You know, Sam is the one, Cap and Bucky are brothers.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's interesting about them is that they're very different people. You know, and I think that, you know, Bucky always has the ability to have his mind corrupted. He can always be taken over by someone, you know? That hasn't been resolved for him. And Sam has his free will, you know? And I think that Sam also, you know, had a similar ethic as Cap as far as service goes in the military. Sam still retains that spirit of service to the community. And he lives in that circle very clearly in the movies.
Yeah.
Book, you know, comic books and the movies are very different. And our interpretation of the characters, and if you've been following the movies, are very different than what the books are. So as it stands in these films, you know, Bucky is still a damaged character who I think feels like he doesn't want the shield. You know, and I think that ultimately, Sam is a character, as I said, with free will, who was the closest in morality to what Cap was. And Cap believes that he deserves it.
Makes sense. All right, I like it. I want to move on and talk about Hawkeye.
Yep.
Really quickly, he becomes Ronin, which a lot of Marvel Comics fans were happy to see. I'm just curious how you guys pitched that to Jeremy, because this is his biggest role so far, I think, in any of the MCU films. And I'm also curious about choreographing the sword fighting against things like the Outriders and things like that.
So the... with Renner, you know, we talked to him early on because when we sat in the room to break Infinity War and break Avengers Endgame, we had so many characters on the table that if you try to jam too many in, there's a point where you break it. And there's a point where not everyone gets a story and then people are just saying lines to be there. And, you know, we felt like Endgame was overstuffed. And we originally, I'm sorry, Infinity War is overstuffed at that point. So we thought, let's take Hawkeye, because we ask ourselves a lot of logical questions. Okay, so post Civil War, he gets broken out of prison. He's got a family. People know where his family is. Do you make a decision to be on the run and be away from your family, or do you create a plea bargain with the government and go under house arrest, which you see at the beginning of the film where he has the ankle bracelet on, and live with your family? Well, that's clearly the choice that Clint would have made. He cares the most about his family above anything else. So once you answer that question, then it makes sense for him to be out of the events of Infinity War because he's under house arrest living with his family, the same way that Scott Lang made that decision as well. Cap didn't have to make that decision. Sam and Natasha did not have to make that decision, which is why the three of them are on the run together. And then the story at the beginning of Endgame, where he's with his family at the picnic. That was originally supposed to be at the very end of Infinity War. It's going to be a tease. Where has his character been all this time? Thanos snaps his fingers, it goes to black, and suddenly you come up on this very idyllic scene, shot verite, where Clint is interacting with his family, and you're going, "What? Where am I? Why am I watching this story all of a sudden?" And then slowly his family starts to disappear, and you realize, "Oh crap, it's happening." And then you go around the horn and see all the other characters disappear. It was too confusing, so we decided to move it to the beginning of the next film.
It set the tone.
It sets the tone. It re-reminds you of where you are, what the story was that you felt a year ago. It makes you feel it again. Mm-hmm. And then using the logo is a good way to like jump ahead in story to Tony. Why Ronan? Obviously, it's a, you know, we're comic book fans. We love trying to find ways to bring in all of our favorite characters.
Nailed the costume, by the way. It looks so good.
Judianna Makovsky is another core collaborator of ours that we've worked with on all four movies. And of course, you know, a character like that loses his entire family. What happens to you? I mean, you know, you either become spiritual because it's the only way that you can cope with it, or you bottom out.
And you start killing everybody.
Yeah, and he bottoms out. But he feels like that's a way to punish the good people. I mean, good people died.
Right.
And there's a way now to punish bad people who survive, right? So if somebody flipped a coin and a bunch of good people died and a bunch of bad people lived, now he's going to go rectify that and punish the bad people for surviving.
Right.
And that's the only way he knows how to deal with his anger and his pain. And it makes him a very complicated character in the movie.
I loved his story in this film. It was awesome. I want to move on to the Hulk.
Yep.
Standout of the film, again, another one who was great. Professor Hulk was so much fun to watch. Mark Ruffalo did such a cool job with that.
Yep.
And so did the effects team. One thing I noticed, especially throughout the movie, but especially with the Hulk, was kind of almost a level of self-awareness of being a movie, especially when he sees himself in these time travel covers.
Yeah.
We did time travel. Did you ever consider a joke about where Ruffalo says, "I look different in the past," something like that?
We considered everything. We go through a lot of iterations on these scripts. I mean, what was compelling about that was, all right, again, asking ourselves logical questions. You start Endgame, where are you gonna start? Well, the heroes aren't gonna give up. Let's start where it just left off. Captain Marvel shows up, she's incredibly formidable. And you go, okay, maybe we have a shot of going after Thanos to get these stones back, which seems like a very logical way to proceed as a hero. What's interesting is you then think it's going to be an adventure film, and then we chop his head off 10 minutes later, and now the movie takes a twist on you. That's all of us sitting in a room trying to surprise ourselves and go, well, it can't be that because it's too obvious. Yeah. So what can it be? Well, let's kill him 20 minutes into the film and make it complicated for you so your brain goes to a place of, I have no idea where this film's going.
I don't think a single theory called that. I don't think and we write every theory on our site. I don't think I saw one that said Thanos dies in the first
20 minutes. So, but what's interesting about that is you get a reset, right? You get we sat in the room and went, all right, let's jump to 1 year later. No, let's go to two. No, four. Five, like, let's make sure that we have enough distance that people can change in that time. And now you've sat with it for so long that it's become part of who you are as a person. It's not like a year later, it's 5 years later. Families have started, like Robert. This is my long-winded way of getting to the Hulk, which is, Banner reflects over that five-year period about, the two of us who've been fighting over this host body for years, and we lost because we were fighting. It was selfish of us to fight over the host body. So the only natural progression forward for someone as intelligent as Banner to resolve the situation is, let's merge ourselves. Let's quit fighting over the host body and let's just merge.
So what do you think could be next now that he's injured? Not only is he injured, he's lost Natasha, which is an emotional
huge
connection for him almost more than
and he's lost
most
of them. He's lost an arm, he's lost Natasha.
Yeah.
That's not coming back. He's damaged himself. I don't know, it's interesting. I mean,
is that permanent damage?
It's permanent damage, yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
It's the same way there was permanent damage with Thanos.
Right.
Is that, it's irreversible damage. His arm is, if you notice, it's a lot skinnier, it's blackened.
Yeah.
So he loses a lot of strength there. But who knows? There's a lot of really, smart people left. Maybe somebody helps him repair that. Maybe somebody gives him a new arm. Who knows? I mean, I have no idea where that character goes from here.
Yeah.
The nice thing is we didn't have to pay attention to where it goes
right
after this. We just try to tell a satisfying ending.
I love it. Next, I want to talk about Black Widow. R.I.P. I was kind of shocked when you guys killed Black Widow. And at the same time, I almost feel like I didn't feel the emotion of her death the second time I watched it, because this movie was about bringing people back to life.
Right.
So when she died, I was like, okay, it'll be fine. Yeah. And then the next scene is when it kind of hits. So, I mean, and there's also a Black Widow movie coming. How did you guys decide this? Did that play a factor in it at all? And I mean, what emotional payoff were you expecting versus what you got?
Listen, we make a lot of these choices when we're in the writer's room and we're sitting there talking through it with everyone, us and Eminem. And, it was one of those scenes where we went back and forth for a little while trying to figure out what made the most sense. But really, when you think about Natasha's arc as a character, started off as a villain. She was individualistic, self-concerned. She has a fight with Cap about that in Winter Soldier. They sit in a room and talk about trust, and he says, I can't trust you if you keep lying to me, because clearly you're playing both sides. And that movie is a lesson about playing both sides. And at the end of it, she realizes, I have to believe in myself and believe my own identity moving forward, because I can't trust who I work for. That's the lesson they both get out of that movie. And then you'll see her in Civil War. She's starting to move towards being a leader and seems the obvious successor to Fury. And then she's starting to believe in the family and the community. She says to Cap in the church, the most important thing is about keeping the family together.
Mm-hmm.
She's starting to crave the sense of community as a character. So again, traveling the greatest distance. So where do you take someone who started off as selfish, a villain, individualistic, manipulative, and then started to believe in the greater good and community and family? Where do you take them ultimately to the place of self-sacrifice for the community and for the family? She says it in the scene. No one comes back unless one of us goes over that cliff. And then it became about the two of them, which we thought was just a gut-wrenching way to progress with the scene, is one of them has to beat the other for the right to die. And we saw in Avengers that she's a better fighter than he is. So ultimately, she won the fight.
Yeah. So what the hell happened in Budapest?
That's the question, isn't it? Seems like a story for another time.
We've been wondering that for years. It's heartbreaking that she's dead. She can't come back from that.
It is. Nothing has value unless it has an ending.
Do you think that stories like Budapest and, her father's name being revealed as Ivan, which could be a reference to Ivan Petrovich in the comics, do you think there's payoff for that, or is that just you guys putting seeds in to kind of fulfill your story?
It's putting seeds in to fulfill our story. You can always, and that's what we do in the Marvel Universe, is someone comes in and they pick up the threads.
Right.
Right? But there isn't, the grand plan is always, hey, we have a loose idea of where we can go here. But if you spend a lot of energy thinking about where it goes in the future, you're gonna miss the opportunities that are in front of you in the present. And if you don't make a really good film, nobody's gonna be around for the next one, So we really focus always on the present story, not on where this is all going.
Right. Now I gotta talk about Thanos, man. He's my favorite villain, and I love this thing so much. First of all, really quick, did you guys make any decision on what his blade was made of? Because it was able to break vibranium.
Yeah, clearly Thanos is, a thousand-year-old character who has fought everyone in the universe.
Yeah.
He's the greatest. He's the Genghis Khan of the universe. He would have the greatest weapon, he knows of Eitri. He's been to Eitri to have his glove created. Did he have them create his blade as well? Potentially.
I'm hoping it's adamantium and we melt that thing down in the future and use
but
it somewhere.
It's interesting that it could destroy the shield.
It's a strong material there. When you had the big three versus Thanos, that scene, as a director, I can't even try to wrap my head around how you pulled that off, let alone when everybody else came into the mix. So can you just talk about how you guys choreographed, Hemsworth and Evans and Downey and Brolin and this crazy...
So what we'll do in those situations is It's a combination of our stunt team and our VFX team, where we'll work with both. So, you know, ground fighters and people, you know, characters that can be played by stunt players are executed by the stunt team, and flying characters are executed by VFX, right? So it needs to be a combination, because if Tony's going up in the air, then there's a combination of like VFX coming in and experimenting with what he does based on what the stunt players are doing. And so it's just, again, this massive collaboration. And then we do iterations of it. So we, you know, we'll talk about what we're looking for, then the two teams will do a pass, they'll bring them back to us, we note it, they do another pass, we note it, and then it's sort of how you get there. But, you know, we wanted to make sure that those three characters had their moment together. It's why when the bomb hits, characters are separated. You can't always put, as Marcus would say, everybody on the bus and drive them through scenes, because mm-hmm. then it's just people shouting out windows, and you never like get anything cohesive. You never feel anything.
Right.
You have to take them in smaller bites. So you take the Hulk and Rocket and War Machine, you put them over here. You take Hawkeye, you put them over here. You take these three, you put them over there. And then people can actually relate to one another. 3 to 4 is about the max you can have and still keep relationship in a scene.
I do love how you guys always find a way to do pairings or mm-hmm. kind of break-offs. You did it in Civil War when you had the airport fight. You did it in Infinity War and in this. And I think that makes really great moments that help you follow the action, stay interested in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, that's just a way for us to write substantive scenes where, you know, characters can actually say things to one another. Like, you know, take the, in Infinity War, the Tony Stark, Stephen Strange scene on the spaceship, right? Like that is a great piece of conflict between two characters that can't happen if there's more people there than just Peter Parker, you know?
Did you guys, you don't have to go into too much detail about it, I mean, I love it if you do, but did you guys develop a backstory for Thanos that we didn't see, like how he knows Tony Stark,
of course,
that kind of
we
stuff?
Did a lot of drafts of Infinity War that involved Thanos' backstory. You know, we even had a draft where you saw 10 minutes of his backstory. You saw him as a child, you saw him try to convince his planet that it was doomed and recommend you know, that they randomly kill half the population to save the planet. He gets sent to a prison off the planet. He eventually watches the planet destroy itself.
This is a movie I would watch. I'm kind of glad you didn't do it, because now we might get a movie called Thanos.
We just couldn't. Unfortunately, I just ruined it for you. If we make that movie, but it is a whole other film.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's the value in a story room of writing that draft of the script, because you go, all right, well at least I have that in my brain now, and I understand that, and we can pitch it to Brolin. He can hear that on an intimate level of detail, so we all know what his story is and how he feels about his past, right? So he's a very tortured character who is sociopathic, but weirdly it's like benevolent sociopathy, right?
Yeah.
That's who he is as an adult.
That's, I need to see that at some point. I hope so. Let's move on to Thor.
Yeah.
In time traveling, you guys went back to Thor the Dark World. Which might not be the most popular MCU film. And it became a great moment in this movie. Can you, like, why Thor the Dark World?
Well, it's interesting. If you're, one, because his mother's there, and it's the most resonant, and it is the day his mother died, right? And this is a character who has lost everything. Like, literally, like, John Wick lost his dog. Thor loses his mother, his father, his best friend, his brother, his planet, half his people. Like, they get slaughtered on the ship, and then he loses another half. Mm-hmm. Like, he literally could not have lost more. He feels like he's failed at being a king. And, you know, what do you do with a character like that? Of course, 5 years later, he's going to be bottomed out. You know, where else would he go? You know, and he's let himself go, which again, you take him the farthest distance he can travel. What do? You take somebody who looks like Chris Hemsworth and, you know, and he starts drinking beer every day and he becomes a drunk.
We all finally have that Chris Hemsworth body we've been saying we're working on. Yeah.
Now I can dress as Thor at Comic-Con and fit right in.
And nail it.
So, but The reason we went back to that is because it is the most resonant moment in his life. Who else could help to repair him but his mother? And what's interesting too is that I know, you know, it's not the most popular film, but think about it, if these are all chapters in a book, say there's 21 chapters before you get to the final chapter, which is 22. Yeah, you can read a chapter and go, oh, I love that chapter. But when you get to the ending and you consider the whole book, it may make a chapter more resonant in retrospect.
So how does Lightning braid a beard?
Well, he does it twice, actually. He does it in Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Right? It's the Asgardian magic, man.
I thought it was great. It was a cool moment. And then was it your idea to put Korg in Taika Waititi's pineapple?
Yes, it was
his romper.
It was one of us sitting in the edit room who pitched it because I can't remember why we saw the photo of Taika in that shirt and we're like, well, that's what he has to be wearing. So
I remember you guys had a set photo before Infinity War wrapped and we saw Mjolnir in it. And I was like, wait, Mjolnir wasn't even in Infinity War. Yeah. And then when we went back to the Dark World, I was like, oh, wait. This one, were you mad about that?
That's right,
yes. Were you mad about that one?
That was a weird one. I think it was, it might have been a priest who was at the church that we were shooting at. And for some reason, we took a photo with them with the hammer. And then somebody released the photo, and I went, well, that's not good. But, you know, it's hard to guess.
Oh, yeah, there were so many things in the trailer that we thought we were catching on to stuff, and then...
And that was done during Infinity War, so it's hard to imagine that it was still going to end up in Endgame.
Yeah. All right, now we have to talk about my favorite character for 11 years now. R.I.P., Iron Man.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me why? I'm trying to understand. I've seen it three times. I'm a 27-year-old man, and I've gone to theater three times, and I have sniffled and cried every time.
Well, that's why. No.
Well, it worked.
Listen, it's, you know, it has to cost something.
Yeah.
If you're going to bring everybody back. And of course, everybody's beating us up over the course of the year, saying we know they're coming back. Well, the question is, what cost? Like, there always has to be stakes, or there's no value, right? The same way that we say there has to be an ending, or there's no value, there has to be stakes, or there's nothing resonant in the story. If it doesn't cost you anything to fix the problem, then also I just don't think you're being truthful, because that's not how the world works.
You need the stakes.
It costs to do the right thing a lot of times in this world. And, you know, the Infinity War, you know, villains win. That's true. That's what happens. And if you want to beat villains, it might cost you your life to do it. If it's in service of a higher principle, then that is a noble sacrifice. And the very nature of heroism is sacrifice, right? And you know, that's what defines you as a hero, is that you are willing to sacrifice yourself for others and for the greater good. So in a way, I think Tony Stark was always fated to die. The character that he was, who he was so complex. Started off very selfish. Again, you talk about traveling a distance, right? Mm-hmm. Started off very selfish in Iron Man, ended up being incredibly selfless by the end. That's the greatest distance that you can travel with him. Always struggling with his, you know, his commitment to family or to Iron Man, and having to make a choice. Makes it even more sad is that he finally seems at peace with having a family and giving up Iron Man under the worst circumstances. Like, he lost and he put it away and said, all right, this is my future. It's in fact why he did not want to go back to the past, because he did not want to gamble with losing his daughter. And then ultimately at the end of the movie, he has to make the decision to give her up in order to save everyone. And that is a true hero, and that's why we did it.
It pays off.
Hopefully, it's inspiring and ennobling, and you know,
it worked really well. I'm getting a little worked up. Yeah. What did you guys do for Downey on his last day? You said that was the last thing you shot, so that was kind of a wrap party too, I guess.
Yeah, Robert's one of the sweetest, warmest human beings in the world, but also I don't think he likes to indulge emotional moments.
Right.
You know, it's a hug and a handshake. And and applause from the crew, and I think that's like the limit of what he wants. You know, and he's done. He feels like he did his job, and he's happy, and he doesn't want to like wallow in it any more than that. But it was significant for him. I mean, this is 11 years of his life.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as I love the character, I almost don't want him to come back in some way like a comic book typically would do, because I feel like this was such an awesome moment and an ending for him.
It's done.
So I have to ask, are these like characters like Black Widow and Iron Man and, I mean, even Vision and Gamora of the present timeline, are they dead? Can they be seen again?
So Vision is dead as far as I know. Yeah. Tony's dead. You know, that's it for Robert. He's done. You know, Scarlett has a movie, but it's not, you know, we're not telling linear stories anymore.
Right.
Who's the last? Gamora. You know, Quill's searching for it at the end of the movie. Is she alive? Is she dead? We have no idea. And even if she is alive, it's not the same Gamora.
Right.
The way timelines work is you've gotten a different character. This is not the same person. She doesn't have the same emotional memories. She doesn't have the same relationship to him. You know, so it's, you know, as far as, you know, they look like the same person, but they don't have the same experiences and the same emotional memories. It's not the same person. You know, so that it's, you know, no matter what, it would be, this is a journey for him.
Now that all of this and some of those characters are behind us, I have a few more questions for you, but first, I had an idea to round up a few really impressive individuals who could say the thank yous that I couldn't, and they have sent in a few videos, a few of the people you've worked with.
Well, that's awesome.
I wanted to roll that really quickly. We'll continue this in just a second, but check this out, guys.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, hello, Mr. Russo. Yes, much congratulations to you for making biggest film of all cinema. This movie is quite successful and also is very good. Only mistake was probably not including Luis, Dave and Kurt, yours truly, because of course we would have saved and defeated the bad guy so much more fast, but it's okay. Good job.
Whether you're Team Cap or Team Iron Man, you've helped bring these characters to life, and not just as superheroes, but also as people we can connect with and people we can look up to. And for that, we thank you. I am so forever grateful to be a part of this universe. So thank you, Mr. Russo.
Hey, Joe. I'm here on set wearing a Big Choice mustache, and I just wanted to take a second to say thank you so much. It's been so great working with you, and Marvel changed my life, and you're a part of that, so thank you.
Joe Russo, I just want to congratulate you on all your achievements in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and as someone who worked with you nearly 10 years ago on Community, you directed Senior Chang's very first episode, and since then, I've learned so much from you, and you have taught me so much about pacing, about efficiency, of creative thought, so many things, so many principles that I have learned from you and applied to my own subsequent works, and you're a huge influence on me, and so many people you have worked with owe their careers to you, and I just love you so much as a filmmaker, as a director, as a human being. I've learned so much from you, and congratulations on this night, and much love to you and your family. Mwah.
Hi, Joe. This is Ross Marquand. I just want to congratulate you for all the incredible work you've done in the MCU and beyond. I'm so excited to see what you do next, and I'm just really grateful to have worked alongside you and your brother, and I wish you nothing but the best.
Joe Russo, Endgame, breaking all kinds of records. I remember when we started with Winter Soldier, you were just a young tyke, now you're the king of Hollywood. Brother, thank you for bringing me in this Marvel world, keeping me in this Marvel world, even in a small part. I love you, I'm proud of you, and continued success, man. Thank you.
What's up, man? I just wanted to say I love you. You changed the game. You certainly changed my life. I love the movies that we did together. They are going to be forever in my mind and my memory. And I just think you're the man. So thank you for being you. and doing what you do, and you deserve everything that you wish for. You know, I hope that comes true, and I love you to death, and I'm here. Whenever you need me, I'm here. You're the man. Bye.
Yo, what's up, Joe Russo? Chris Pratt here. You might not recognize me because I'm not in makeup and I'm covered in sweat. And I'll tell you why, because an actor's job is never complete. That's a drop of sweat right there. They said keep it to 15 seconds. That's already 15 seconds. But I was just supposed to say thank you for what you mean to me. You're extraordinary at fantasy football, and you're a brilliant man with big ideas, follow through, vision. I'm eternally grateful for the way you guys have handled the Avengers, Endgame and Infinity War, changed all our lives. And like I said, an actor's job. I'm sweating right now because I'm out working, because ultimately I don't work just on my voice and my spirit, but also on my body as a prop. So thank you for puppeteering me into what a lot of people are saying is the greatest performance in history, Star-Lord from Endgame. Later, buddy.
Huge thank you to everybody who submitted their thank you. I'm really proud of the video, and clearly you're very beloved by the stars of your films.
That's very sweet.
Yeah, it was.
I paid them all a lot of money to say that.
A couple quick, really general questions just about Endgame, not necessarily character centric. One thing people have caught is that Howard the Duck was in the epic Avengers Assemble
crazy
scene.
Story. So literally like a month ago, maybe less, we were sitting. No, it was just over a month ago. It was one of the last things we did. We were sitting in VFX, and I was watching that shot of everybody coming out of the portals, and I was like, God, we'd be so awesome to have a Howard the Duck cameo here.
And it worked.
And I just said to the VFX team, is there any way in hell you could pull this off? And literally, like, we're like 3 days away from end of all VFX shots, right? And they like looked at me and they're like, we'll see what we can do.
We need the duck, guys. Yeah. Go back to work.
So that's why I
forget
have
your family. Did you ever consider having the Netflix Defenders characters or the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. pop through one of the portals?
We just have so many characters we're dealing with already in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's not like to try to combine television and film on the schedules that they're all on and get stories to line. It's so hard already.
Yeah.
Which just, you know, the directors that we're working with, the Marvel Universe, know.
Was Captain Marvel originally going to be in Infinity War at all?
No. I don't believe that was ever the case. Yeah.
Okay. We had a reference of an earthquake under the Atlantic Ocean from Okoye.
We did.
Namor?
Interesting.
So, yes, you heard it here first, guys.
I don't know.
It's definite.
Yeah, it could be. could not be. Could just be an earthquake.
Let me have my fun, all right? Can I? one of the things everybody talks about leading up to these films when you're trying to prevent the spoilers is fake footage. How much fake footage actually exists?
It's not footage that is shot purposely for being fake footage. If there's something that works for a trailer, we'll do it for a trailer, but not, you know, to like Ruffalo talking about we shot five endings. We don't have the energy to shoot one ending.
You just got
to
give Ruffalo five endings, or he's going
to crawling to the finish line just to shoot one ending. It gets complicated for him because he's in a motion capture suit, and sometimes we can throw him in a motion capture stage where he's not working with anybody, so it can get disorienting about like what's happening in the story. And,
right.
You know, but and then anything we do that we alter in trailers is done with VFX or with footage that was expressly shot for that.
Interesting. Thanos in the post-credit scene of Age of Ultron gets the gauntlet. Is that on Nivadilir? Is that the gauntlet each made?
Yeah, it would seem that is where he is.
Okay. Yes. I'm a huge Nova fan. My favorite hero in the comics, Richard Rider. His origin story seems to be set up by Infinity War, and it hasn't been undone.
Mm-hmm.
Was that intentional at all? Did you guys ever consider introducing him?
We never considered introducing him. I think if, you know, that it exists more in the Guardians universe, that would have to be a James Gunn thing. Again, we just had too many characters on our plate. And you can't introduce somebody, you know, that doesn't have their own movie like Marvel. You can't just throw them into the middle of the final chapter of a book.
In the words of Wong, what, you wanted more?
Exactly.
Right. I feel like he was talking to a lot of us who were making requests like that. And earlier today, we had the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer drop. Came with huge spoilers for Endgame, one being that it created a multiverse. How did you guys work with John Watts to make sure he was in line with what you were doing and you guys could kind of help him at all?
We didn't. Unfortunately, we just kind of dropped this movie in his lap and we're like, good luck, John. We had conversations early on. He knew what we were doing. He knew what was going on. He knew, how it was going to affect. Look, one of the bravest choices, I think, of the whole movie is the fact that the Marvel Universe moving forward is now 5 years in the future.
Right.
And it's a future where half the people were gone for 5 years and then suddenly came back at the exact same age at which they left. Kids have been born, people have moved on. Like, this is a crazy world.
Right.
And an interesting world moving forward. And that's a very, very bold choice on the part of Kevin, is that, this is not a reset. This is going to be complicated.
Yeah. Mysterio's from another Earth in that movie. Is there a chance like a guy like Tony Stark could be on another Earth?
I mean, if there are multiverse timelines, there are other Tony Starks that exist, but they would not be this Tony Stark. They would not, again, have the memories or the emotional memories of this Tony Stark. They exist in the alternate timeline.
And the obligatory question, I don't have to read the comment section to know that it's in there. Does this mean the X-Men have been created? Yeah, I have to ask. I'll get fired, okay?
Yes.
They'll fire me if I don't ask that question. And now we have some questions from Twitter. People submitted using the hashtag #EveningWithJoe. Thank you, everybody who submitted. I chose as many as I could. The first one comes from MovieKing37. Are you saving Joel McHale and Allison Breeze cameos for Secret Wars?
You know, we tried to get everyone in these movies, and I couldn't get Allie or Joel scheduled to work ever.
Mm.
But, we try to get everyone in. The only one I'm sad about it, Starburns.
This one comes from Jacob. He wants to know, does Doctor Strange have his time stone back if the stones were destroyed or they're sent to the past? Does in the sequel, does he have one?
Well, that's an interesting question.
You guys just love, hey, Scott Derrickson,
yeah.
Here you go.
I'd have to wait to the sequel to find that out.
Here's this, I'm going to try this name. I don't know where it comes from. I don't think it's on his birth certificate, but it comes from Krangis McBasketball. First, a compliment. Joe, you and Anthony created an amazing 3-hour thrill ride of a movie. Thank you for that. My question, is there a specific movie genre that you're itching to tackle that you haven't gotten to do yet?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know. We've kind of dabbled in all of them. I don't know. I guess maybe at some point we'd like to go back and do like another dark comedy like Arrested Development.
Okay.
I'd have to find the right material.
Gotta say, 21 Bridges looks cool. You guys are producers on that. Cherry sounds awesome with Tom Holland.
Yeah, 21 Bridges is great, by the way.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. Chadwick looks like he kills it.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Next question comes from Dubs. I think this is an interesting one. How many alternate endings did you have in working on this, and when was the final idea set in stone?
So we wrote alternate endings, obviously, to throw people off the scent, or if you have to distribute scripts to people, you want to make sure that the information is either redacted or not the true information. So there are many multiple endings. We decided on the ending of Tony Stark and Steve Rogers 3 years ago before we started work on the scripts, so that we knew where we were going.
Right. Dubs, I like that question. I'm going to get in touch with you and send you one of our quarter scale Infinity Gauntlets made by Hot Toys, sent
good
to
job.
Us from Sideshow. And we have one more to give away. And just because of the balls it takes to ask this question, I think, Jorge Del Campo, which DC character would you like to direct? Are you even allowed to say that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, as far as what I collected as a kid, I collected Batman. That was one of the DC characters I collected, and so I would have to be a Batman.
That would be killer, you guys, on a Batman movie. And Jorge, we're going to send you one of these as well. Thank you for the questions, everybody who used hashtag Evening with Joe. We have one more question. This comes from @BrandonDavisBD on Twitter. When are you going to put the guy from comicbook.com on your movies?
When does he want to get
Joe, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk with us, and everybody for watching. I hope you had fun. I hope we answered all of your questions. Congratulations. I'm going to leave here and go see the movie for a fourth time, and just enjoy it, man. Take a little break.
Thank you. I'm going to rest. I'm going to go hang out with my kids for a while.
There you go. Yeah. Have fun with it. Thank you, everybody, so much for watching.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for the way you've responded to the movie. It means everything to my brother and I.
See you, everybody.
Take care.